Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm John Zak on behalf of the appellants. If, with the Court's permission, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Sure.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is on appeal from the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, and it presents an issue that's confronting numerous courts around the country, which is what to do in the wake of the RGR Nabisco decision by the Supreme Court. The issue that we have to deal with is, how do we define a domestic injury?
What test do we use to
What test? Exactly. Starting with the language in the RICO statute, plaintiffs are able to recover for any injury to their business or property. And what we allege in this case is a business that was entirely wiped out.
But it was all wiped out outside the United States.
It's all wiped out. So,
but my point is outside the United States.
Well, we would say no.
We would say no.
When you talk about the business, I think what's important here is to understand what kind of business
I think we understand the kind of business, but why isn't that wrong? What happened inside the United States, number one? And number two, Judge Menendez went through in her opinion and seemed to take everything she could identify from the complaint that might arguably be an allegation of harm, and they concluded none of this happened in the U.S. Did she leave anything out of her analysis?
She did, Your Honor. What she left out is my client has, the majority of his business is with law firms and clients that reside here in the United States. So what his job is to collect information in China, and then his product is to deliver it back to his clients here in the United States. He reports back to the law firms. The law firms typically use that information in regulatory and criminal investigations. That's how this narrow sort of world works. So if you were to value his business, let's say I went to go buy his business and I looked at, like, what is this thing worth? There are desks and there's office space in China, but the value to the business is the clients that he has and the ongoing contracts that he has with companies in the United States. Because
don't the contracts specify that, at least the one we're dealing with, that the law of China will control?
The agreement that he signed with, specifically with GSK, did say that. But I don't think it's a question of what law controls. It's a question of where is he injured, where does he hurt?
But his compensation was also pursuant to the same contract. It was going to be in Chinese currency.
Yeah, they were paying in Chinese currency here.
And their business was all located there, so it was unable to operate its business from China. You're talking about the impact it had on its ability to procure customers.
Not procure. It's effect on customers and contracts that it had ongoing.
But so that's the effect of the conduct, not the location of the injury.
No.
Right?
So the test is framed as where. This is why we,
You said the test, but there's no.
There is no test. The test that we're advocating is the test from Judge Fela, who's written three sort of very thoughtful opinions on this out of the Southern District of New York. And what she does is she breaks down, there's a test for property and she has a test for business. And the test that she advances for business is whether there are substantial negative business consequences occurring in the United States. And that's how you frame the question. And so when you look at my client's business, he has tremendous negative business consequences in the United States because all of his customers, all of his ongoing contracts are in the United States. Those are wiped out. Those are gone.
Well, that means that any foreign company who relies on the customer base of folks located in the United States will contend they have a domestic injury.
They may, but remember, there's a limiting principle here. I'm not advocating for, some of these cases you have people shipping, corn oil or, tangible products. I'm not saying just because you have one customer in the United States that you pass the test. Judge Fela, I think these opinions are very useful because she has a limiting principle. It has to have substantial negative business consequences.
How does Judge Fela's opinions fare after the Second Circuit has given its rulings about how to define the location test?
I think it's fair well because the Baskunin case, right, relates to property, not business. And specifically, it relates to tangible property. Mm-hmm. And what it found there was, the defendants had stolen some bonds and some stock shares, and they had stored them in a safe in New York. And they said, all right, that's physical property. You lost it there. This is different. That would be the same under
Judge Fela. It's physical property, but it's the value of it as a kind of intangible value. You can put a specific dollar on it. You can look at the face value of the bonds. But we're not talking about something that's only worth the value of, the, of a sheet of paper that the, yeah. the thing is printed on.
I think that's right. But the second, the way the Second Circuit at least treated those bonds is they treated those as being physical, tangible property. And what they're trying, to eliminate there was, you know, they didn't want a situation where just because you have a bank account in Manhattan, everybody in the entire universe would be trying to sue in the Southern District of New York. And so they were trying to establish a limiting principle. So just having a bank account wasn't enough to have an effect. But to answer the court's question, I think Judge Fela's reasoning lines up exactly with Baskin. The difference here is we're under the business sort of part of it. That's property. We're under the business, as in the RICO statute has. And the reason you permit business injuries to be recovered is because businesses have different types of injuries, right? Losing your customers, losing your contracts, those are all types of injuries that businesses suffer. And you have to focus on that. And the district court didn't look at that. And I think if you look through the cases that have tried to grapple with the post-RGR world, they almost all deal with property or intangible property, not an actual business. And so to look at what my client had is he has a business that's wiped out, and the business is, the majority of the business is with U.S., he's providing service to U.S.-based law firms and addressing U.S.-based legal problems.
So are you saying that the Second Circuit and the Seventh Circuit cases, which seem to be the only circuits that ruled on this post-RJR, they were property cases, tangible, intangible. You're saying there's another category called business, and your position is that when it's a business, the injury can occur where your client base has dried up.
Well, no. So first, yes. I think the Baskunin is property tangible. The Seventh Circuit case is property intangible. I think it's a bundle of litigation rights.
Right.
I am saying there is this other category, business, and it's not just me. That's what the statute says, and that's how Judge Fela sort of derives her test. And it's not just your customer base dried up. I think there are a number of cases that defendants cite, which correctly, prospective or possible clients don't count. That's too intangible to be an actual injury. I'm not saying that. I'm saying actual ongoing customers that were working under contract.
What are the allegations in the complaint that Judge Fernandez missed that she should have relied upon in concluding that there was not a sufficient contract to get standing in the RICO?
Yeah, I think it's where we allege our injuries, including in paragraph 9 of our complaint, where we discuss that we had numerous ongoing contracts and customers. This is a very important point for our argument.
It's very important point, but let's say we look at the contract. Maybe you're kind of looking at the one of the two tests that focuses on where the conduct occurs that gives rise to the injury. And forgetting for a second the injury, because that's kind of hard to define. But how do you, where the contract is, that's not an easy question. Is it where the parties meet to negotiate the contract? Is it where they execute the contract? It's the kind of question that reflects the law of conflicts for a while, and maybe we should try to look at this in terms of the law of conflicts. And you're almost arguing a kind of international shoe argument on steroids in terms of substantial contracts with a form that justify RICO jurisdiction.
So what I'm arguing is, I do think there is a place for looking at where the RICO conduct, is directed. I'm not arguing that just where the RICO conduct occurs is enough. I think the cases are very critical of that. But I think our argument is narrower and more practical, which is you've got a business, it's injured, it's wiped out. Where is it hurt? Where is it feeling these negative consequences? And it's with its client base, which the contracts are wrapped in with the client base. But it's, what were you doing? Well, I had 15 different clients that I was doing work for. It's like a law firm. Like we all work. We build different clients each day. That's my client had the same type of business. So when this all happened, he's working on other work. He's working on other cases, and those are all gone. And those are U.S.-based injuries because those are all work that he's doing, or majority of
the
work.
But the injury is felt where the business is, not where he lost it, not where the business opportunity disappeared.
Well, so that is adopting sort of the narrow formalistic rule where you're saying, where you're locking yourself into just the residence of the person or the business. But under Judge Fela's test, it's where are you feeling the negative business consequences?
But the Supreme Court, one of the quotes in RJR Nabisco is, nothing in 1964C provides a clear indication Congress intended to create a private right of action for injuries suffered outside the United States. All these injuries were felt outside. It was caused by the absence of business. But tell me how the injury wasn't felt outside the United States.
Well, it is felt. I'm not saying it's exclusively in the United States. It is felt outside the United States. A part component of that injury is when his business is shut down, his computers are seized, he loses his space there, he loses his employees in China. The other piece that he's losing, though, is his customers and his contracts, which are all in the United States. And I'm not, and this is critical to his business, because, you know, I think the Supreme Court recognized that there is a lot of, there's a lot of fact patterns, and it's very difficult to map on to every single one. But you have to look at what his business is. He's only in China to gather information. His real business, his real base, is his U.S.-based customers who's going back and reporting to, and he's using, that's all used for compliance with U.S. laws. It's kind of crazy.
Especially in the times of the Internet, we could actually, and some of this is probably going on here, you could, without much difficulty, have a situation where parties got together and created substantial contracts in some far-off land that impacted directly persons in the United States. They can even be parties to a contract. The persons entering into this contract never once set foot in the United States, all done via the Internet. The business explodes, and the damage is felt by the people in the United States. And let's say it explodes because of some kind of contract which would run afoul of RICO laws. You're saying that there we would look not to the significance of the relationship between the form where the business was, but to the forum where the business, where the harm to the business was felt, even though there had been no physical contact whatsoever with that latter forum, because that's where the business was lost. That's what you're arguing.
No, I mean, I don't think I'm asking for that sort of an
excuse. Because it sounds like they can't be the law, but to me that sounds like exactly what you're arguing.
But it's not.
I mean, you can't concede it.
I'm not arguing
what you're arguing.
What I'm arguing is very different, which is the FALA test, the substantial negative business consequences, right? Let's just take each word, right? It has to be substantial. That would not be substantial, I don't think, right?
Well, it would be substantial if all the business impacted U.S. persons and companies. That's your scenario.
I think our facts are very different than that, in that what our scenario is that we have – Our entire business is built around a U.S. regulatory scheme, right, in doing these FCPA-type cases. That's what we do. And our substantial our contact with the United States is our entire work product is a service that's being used to service U.S. laws, right, and to sit before the U.S. Attorney's Office and make a proffer and to do those sorts of things that you do in these FCPA-type cases. And so his business is unique in that regard, where what he's doing is he has to be in China to gather that information, and then he has to deliver it to a U.S. lawyer and then eventually to a U.S. regulator. And I think that's a very unique sort of set of circumstances. And none of these cases have a services business like this. They're almost all tangible goods. And I think that to not capture this type of a business is not what the RICO statute wants to do or was meant to do, and I don't think it's what RJR rules for. I'm sorry, I'm out of time, so I'll be back.
Okay, we'll let you go for quite a while. And Mr. Hansen?
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. Kurt Hansen from Paul Hastings on behalf of GSK, the appellees here. The trial court got this one absolutely right. And I think your early questions were actually right on point as well. Everything occurred here in China, and I'll get to their allegations about alleged new tests.
I know it's early in the morning, but you just said, here in China. So, you probably have more sleep than I did. I'm not the way in the United States.
Yeah. Here in China, that's sort of the way I talk, actually.
Okay,
I sort of
really?
Say here, because, you know, I'm in China a lot, but anyway, okay. I apologize for that.
Right.
Therefore, I found no standing. As pointed out, plaintiff's business was located in China, assisted companies which sought to conduct business in China, and most importantly, they found that there was no U.S. offices or any tangible property that they had here in China. And I keep saying here in China, but in China.
But your adversary is focused on this business thing rather than property.
Yeah, forget tangible property because that makes it easier. But this is not a case dealing with tangible property. It's not the Biscano. I always mispronounced that case, Second Circuit case. How do we take the approach, the limitations of RICO after Nabisco, and apply those in a situation where we're talking about injury to intangible property?
Right. And I think what my adversary did not discuss and did not make a submission on is Armada. I think Armada actually is a very solid test. Armada says you have tangible property. That is, as both your honors have pointed out, makes it for an easier question. If you have tangible property here, you have a property interest in the United States.
Armada is a Seventh Circuit case.
Seventh Circuit,
right.
Excuse me. Yeah,
that's
Seventh Circuit case. And then would find, to make it easier, found that in, right, exactly. So let me just restate that. So tangible property was found in Baskunin. That was an easy case, found that there were multiple tangible property located. Then Armada came along and said, we have an intangible interest here. That intangible property interest here was the loss of litigation rights. And there was some dispute about that. And then they said, that's an intangible right. What are we going to do? So we need to take a look at the location of where the injury was felt. Where was the injury felt? And they said, an intangible business, because that was a business who was a plaintiff in that case. They said, what are we going to do in that? They said, okay, you have to see where the injury was felt. There the injury was felt in China. And so what we would argue, and I think is pretty clear here, that whether it's business interest or whether or not it's intangible interest, there would be really no difference. That, in fact, was a business who had lost something in Armada. Here there's a business that actually lost. In fact, here we would actually say it's even clearer, right? Because here the business was lost. What did they allege? They allege one injury. They lost completely the business. Where was the business located? Where was that? That was in China. So we don't think that there's any distinction, respectfully, between intangible and a business injury.
We think that the considerations of Armada, because the statute says business or property. Property has tangible and intangible. Your view is we should either not call business intangible or apply Armada to business.
Yeah, we think that the test is where is the injury felt?
Well, if we do that, I'm looking at paragraph 9 that Mr. Zach alluded to it, and he said that the events in this case, the majority of contracts with companies in the United States, including U.S. law firms, much of the business focused on FCPA investigations and other internal investigations, goes on to say that China Ways had numerous pending engagements and contracts with law firms and businesses in the United States. Does it depend on which side of the mirror we look through? So what if one of the U.S.-based businesses was able to come in and, based upon the same set of RICO predicates, argue for civil RICO liability? But they have to be on this side of the pond as opposed to the other side of the pond. Would that make a difference? And should it make a difference?
I think that's an interesting question. I mean, most of these cases obviously are looking at foreign companies and trying to decide whether or not there was a domestic injury. I think if you had a domestic company and you were taking a look at sort of the injuries, you would look to where is the injury felt. That's the test. Where is the injury felt? So here, under your hypothetical, Your Honor, if there was a U.S. company had injuries that were felt in the United States, then we would say that yes. And in fact,
would a breach of a contract or cessation of a contract be such an injury? Because the contract, you've got two parties, at least two, maybe a lot more. And one of those parties, at least, is in the United States. Why wouldn't that party, you know, you could argue that this person doesn't have standing to assert that injury. Maybe that's where we are. But why wouldn't that U.S.-based company have an injury that would be cognizable under a RICO suit?
Well, I'm saying actually they could if the injury was felt in the United States. A contract is property, but it's an intangible property. And so we actually think that the test under Armada makes complete sense. And again, what we would say here, looking at the allegations that they have, what they allege is they lost their business. They allege that there were certain business opportunities and other courts that have found actually just in these specific cases that it's not enough to say business contracts.
It said lost revenue in the United States. And the brand and the goodwill and other assets were lost. The goodwill, where do you find that? The brand would be in China, but I'm not sure we can isolate it to China. This is all coming from paragraph 9.
Well, again, Your Honor, the injury was felt, we believe, in China. Now, if you take a look at the individual contracts, there are other cases that have said, listen, there's business opportunities in the United States. There's contracts that are in the United States. They all have said that those are intangible interests of the plaintiff. And then, therefore, since they're intangible assets, you have to look at where the injury is felt. And, in fact, some of the public policy that they found, in cases where people would say that opportunities were lost or there are contracts or there are other business opportunities in the United States, they have found it would be easy for somebody similar to here, where this is a Chinese company, right? Their whole thing, they say, connecting the dots in China. Everything happened in China. It's not surprising, as most companies that are foreign, they have some U.S. connections. All these cases have some U.S. connections. The question is it enough that they had customers in the United States? We would say no in terms of that. They may have some contracts. Contracts are being performed in China. The injury is being felt in China. And so if it's just enough that a plaintiff can come in and say, I have customers, or you have customers in the future, maybe in the United States, that would swallow up the rule. Again, remembering that their comedy and other reasons were why they actually said that we need to find that there has to be a domestic injury. There has to be an injury in the United States. And it's not enough just to come in and say that they have certain customers.
I'd like to ask you about a procedural question I have.
Yes, Your Honor.
The district court said that by failing to allege domestic injury, that the case should be dismissed pursuant to a 12B1 for lack of jurisdiction on standing. Isn't the domestic injury requirement really just an element of RICO, and that 12B6 would have been the proper prism? And if that's right, does it matter here?
We agree that under prior cases that it probably would have been more proper to be a 12B6 because it was a finding on the merits. We don't think that it matters. It hasn't been brought up by the other side. The judge specifically said, even though I'm applying the 12B1 standard, that I'm going to look at 12B6 and apply the facial standard. In other words, I'm going to take the things that have been alleged in the complaint as true. So we think that while it may have been more proper to consider it as a 12B6, there was no prejudice that
attached. What is your position, though? Is the domestic injury requirement an element of RICO, or is it a jurisdictional matter?
I think it's actually, I would say, both, Your Honor. It's a standing requirement that usually is adjudicated under 12B6. So I think that's where the confusion came in place. It's a standing predicate to bring a RICO claim.
Are you saying it's a standing predicate because it describes the type of injury in fact someone needs to sustain? Like, why are we calling it a standing requirement? Or are you talking about it as a prudential standing requirement, meaning to give me statutory authority to bring this cause of action, which is actually really a 12B6?
Is it RICO standing or Article 3 standing?
It's a RICO standing, Your Honor, is the way I understand it, is it's a RICO standing, something that you have to allege. You have to allege injury, now found domestic injury, and you have to find also proximate cause to actually have standing to bring a RICO claim.
Thank you.
Okay. So one thing I did want to address is that they suggested that there was some other test by Judge Varela, and actually she had some subsequent decisions in which she talked about focusing on where the effects of the injury are. We would argue that the business consequences test that appellant is talking about is no different. Varela didn't assert a different standard that one is going to take a look at, and you have multiple places you're looking at. That judge, and I think all courts, are taking a look at where is the injury felt, not where certain business consequences are. Where is the injury felt by the party that is bringing the claim. China is absolutely where that was felt. We also...
Is it the only place that it was felt?
It is the only place it's felt, Your Honor.
The parties to the contract did not feel anything here. And then he said, well, maybe if they did, then there is a statutory standing issue that pops up. That this is not the right party to assert the injuries that were felt by the contractual parties in the United States. Is that where you're going?
Well, where we are is there's one injury, Your Honor, the loss of business. That loss of business is felt, and they have no other. They don't have a harder issue would have been, Your Honor, frankly, if they had a subsidiary that was in New York or California, as some of the cases have, where they have a real business interest. Here they have nothing in the United States. So where can the loss be felt when you lose your business as a Chinese business? You're feeling it in China. You're not feeling it, you know. Do you have, it's at best a derivative injury based on in terms of the U.S. conduct. It's not the injury. The injury is being felt. The loss of the business is being felt in China. Just with my remaining time, one of the things that we did bring up was obviously comedy. One of the reasons for this, and I think what's this case, you don't have to necessarily do an analysis of each case to determine, but the courts have said we have to be careful not to have U.S. courts or U.S. juries under RICO actually sit in judgment about what's happening in other countries. And I would submit that that's exactly what the appellants are asking the court to do here. Not you, but it would ultimately be a jury. We had a Chinese court make a decision that it wanted to prosecute and in fact found them guilty of Chinese violations. Here they're asking for treble damages and attorney's fees, basically to sit in judgment, and their papers are replete with complaints about the Chinese justice system. And essentially what they're doing is asking court here and to get punitive damages, in fact, for how they were treated in China. But we think that also implicates proximate cause, which the court didn't get to. But we believe that they were intervening actors, the justice system there, that they were the true ones. We were not the proximate cause. But it also implicates policy issues, that they're coming here and asking a United States court, a United States jury, to sit in judgment of what happened in China. So with that, unless you have any other questions, I think we would just ask that you affirm the very well-reasoned and thoughtful decision. Thank you very much.
Does anybody have any questions?
No, not right here.
It's amazing how the appellee always views the district court opinion as being very well-reasoned.
If I may, Your Honor, mm-hmm. I want to respond to a couple of things. Let's go back to the Judge Fela cases. There's three cases. The first Elsevier case, she looks at business injuries. And what she first looks for is she asks whether or not the fraudulent conduct had, and I'm quoting, had some effect on plaintiff's relationships with actual or prospective U.S. customers. So she's looking under the business test, well, do you have customers here in the U.S.? They didn't. She says no, so there's no business injury there. She looked if there was a competitive injury, like were they being hurt vis-a-vis their competitors? Like that's another type of business injury. She said, yes, there was. But that was in Brazil. So to try and collapse, again, business under property is a mistake, and that's not how Judge Fela did it. In the second Elsevier, where she actually found RICO standing, she focused on property instead of business. What she found was this company was selling journals, and they were deprived of them in New York. So I think it's a huge mistake to read out business from the property and business. That's just not how the statute's written. Second, the Armada case was not a business injury. It was an arbitration award. The business there was, I think, the plaintiff was from Singapore. The defendant was in China. They went to a London arbitral proceeding, and they tried to enforce the award in the United States instead of somewhere else. So it was not a business injury. Third, he keeps saying missed opportunities. We are not arguing opportunities. We are arguing actual ongoing business.
actual work that is being done, not some speculative thing that might happen. The case is focused on speculative things that might happen. We're talking actual business that we had at the time. And again, it's not just some connection to the United States. I'm not going to reiterate what I'm saying, but this business is one where they repeatedly, you know, they're providing the service to the U.S. for very specific U.S. legal reasons. And I think what he asked, the rule they want you to ask is just too, to employ, is just too formalistic. Saying, where is the business located? Think about it. If we had just an office here, that when we paid rent for an office, that when we flew back to meet with our law firms, with our clients, that's going to make the difference instead of staying in a hotel room? That's crazy. That's too formalistic. And that can't be the difference. We really do respectfully suggest that Judge Fela's like three opinions and her test captures the unique aspects of business. It gives the court strong limiting principles and allows cases, legitimate cases, to be brought like this one, and limits the sort of frivolous cases that a lot of the other cases have concerns with. And the last thing I want to say is that it's also worth considering too where the conduct is directed. You know, some of those other cases where they didn't look at the actual where the injury is.
I didn't think you were relying on conduct. I thought you said that.
It's not conduct. It's where, if there's ever an intent to where it's directed, I think that's a relevant thing to look at. We argued in our brief. I don't think it's dispositive, but I think it's something to look at. Where is the defendant intending its harm to happen? Which is different than just where the conduct occurred. And unless the court has any questions, we appreciate its time.
No, but just like the last point, why wouldn't the answer to that be China, where the defendant was intending their harm? Why wouldn't the answer to that be China?
Because the purpose here, as alleged in the RICO conspiracy, is this was an effort to obstruct an ongoing U.S.-based investigation. So the whole point here is to undermine that ongoing FCPA investigation. And so their harm is directed at sort of subverting that process and using my client as an unwitting instrument. And he has his entire life ruined, gets thrown into jail for that. We appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll take a minute.